Thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak at this forum. Today, I would like to do two things. The first is just to take the opportunity to reflect on developments in secured issuance in recent years. And secondly, I would just like to speak a little about the Reserve Bank's reporting initiatives in this area, which were actually announced by Guy Debelle at the corresponding meeting a year ago. Now, it's been almost 2 years to the day since the first covered bond was issued by an Australian bank. It was not an easy time for new issuers. Financial markets, as you may recall, were fairly volatile, and the US Fed, the ECB and the Bank of England had all announced non-conventional policies towards the end of 2011. The covered bonds that were issued, AAA-rated five-year securities, were sold at spreads to CGS of more than 220 basis points. I'm sure the issuers will recall what the actual spread was. Ultimately, conditions improved. And over the 2 years since the passage of the enabling legislation, covered bonds have proven to be a useful source of funding for Australian banks, notwithstanding the fact that they have brought about some subordination of unsecured debt holders. About $57 billion has been raised, predominantly in offshore markets. This represents just over one quarter of the bank's long-term debt issuance over this period, although the pattern of issuance has evolved with financial market conditions. In particular, covered bonds have proven useful as a wholesale funding source that is less sensitive to global risk events than traditional unsecured funding. This was evident in the bank's issuance of predominantly covered bonds in early 2012, as conditions in funding markets deteriorated because of sovereign debt concerns, particularly in Europe. In fact, around that time, the Reserve Bank noted that the delineation between secured and unsecured funding for the banking system was perhaps not as stark as market conditions implied at that time. As it turned out, conditions in global unsecured funding markets improved from mid-2012, and Australian banks returned to what might be considered more typical patterns of issuance, raising the majority of their wholesale funding via unsecured bonds. Importantly, covered bonds, as you will be aware, have enabled banks to diversify their investor base and reduce their funding risk. Australian banks' covered bonds have consistently been rated AAA, which has allowed the banks to attract new funding from investors with AAA mandates. This has probably also assisted those banks repurchasing their government guaranteed debt, as the banks were able to offer investors an alternative AAA asset to invest in. There's also some evidence of a broadening in banks' investor base along the geographical dimension, with regional central banks, for example, among the buyers of Australian covered bonds. European investors have also provided demand for these instruments, reflecting their familiarity with the asset class. This has contributed to banks issuing wholesale debt across a broader range of currencies in the past 2 years, compared with their issuance patterns prior to the introduction of covered bonds. In particular, a larger share of banks' bond funding has been raised in euros, notwithstanding the ructions in European markets at times. The increase in the share of euro-denominated issuance has been entirely due to covered issuance. Moreover, Australian banks have issued covered bonds in Swiss francs, Norwegian krona, currencies that have been scarcely used for unsecured issuance. Covered bonds have also enabled banks to increase the tenor of their issue, which has helped to smooth the maturity profile of their outstanding debt. The banks have typically issued covered bonds at tenors of 5 to 10 years, compared with a norm of 3 to 5 years for their unsecured issuance. More strikingly, the banks have issued covered bonds at very long tenors, sometimes exceeding 15 years. With the Australian banks supplying around 10% of global covered bond issuance recently, compared with about 5% of financials unsecured issuance, they have established themselves as covered bond issuers in the global markets. That high share of global covered bond issuance reflects both subdued issuance by European institutions and the desire of the Australian banks to establish themselves in the market. Perhaps more importantly, these bonds have traded at similar spreads to comparable issues by foreign banks, as you can see here in this graph. There is scope for further issuance, with each of the major banks having utilised roughly one-third of its legislative limit, based on current levels of over-collateralisation. It's likely, however, that banks will use their remaining capacity sparingly, particularly if conditions in global funding markets improve further. Banks have indicated a preference to keep some capacity for covered issuance in reserve to draw upon in the event of another bout of stress in global financial markets. I'd now like to turn to developments in securitisation. The improvement in funding market conditions since the middle of 2012 has also exerted its influence on the securitisation market more broadly. The past year has seen a steady run of deals, with pricing at some of the tightest spreads since 2007. The decline in the cost of issuance has extended to non-bank lenders and smaller banks. In particular, a number of issuers have returned to the market after a hiatus of several years. And there has been a re-emergence of demand for non-prime RMBS, including deals with a significant number of low-doc loans. More broadly, investors seem to be increasingly comfortable with greater variation in pool characteristics. This is perhaps best illustrated by the greater variation in loan seasoning observed in the past couple of years. Some issuers have been able to place loans with investors that they had previously held on their balance sheets for an extended period, while others have sold pools of relatively recent loans. There has also been a greater variation in the structures employed by issuers during the past several years. Some issuers have reduced their use of LMI, which follows a move by the credit rating agencies to discount the credit enhancement that LMI brings to an RMBS. On the other hand, credit support has been increased to maintain AAA ratings. Recent years have seen the emergence of some preference for bullet structures to minimise prepayment and extension risk for investors. Offshore investors in particular have shown a preference for bullet features. This partly reflects the mandates of certain investors, such as US money market funds, to hold securities with finite maturities. Issuers have incorporated arrangements such as liquidity underwriting and rollover features to provide bullet-like structures to deals. Nonetheless, there are limits to the extent that these structures can be incorporated without significant over-collateralisation or liquidity underwriting costs. As such, bullet notes have typically accounted for a small portion of the funds raised in an RMBS. The securitisation market remains principally about passing through cash flows. Taken together, the increased variation in deal characteristics, alongside tighter pricing and a solid pace of issuance, point to an improvement in the underlying demand for Australian RMBS. Indeed, with the recovery in demand from private investors, the AOFM announced in April that it would not make any further investment in RMBS. For around 4.5 years, the AOFM acted as a cornerstone investor, purchasing AAA-rated tranches of small lenders' RMBS. In fact, the AOFM has actually sold a very small amount of RMBS in the past year. It currently still holds about $8 billion of these securities, with its peak holding of about $11 billion in late 2011. Although if you look in gross terms at purchases, they're actually closer to $15 billion, which has been very important support for the market through that period. Some of the increase in private demand has come from abroad, which may reflect the dearth of marketed RMBS in some overseas markets. As you will be aware, RMBS issuance in Europe has been slow to recover amid subdued demand for credit among European households. Moreover, much of the securitisations that have occurred have been posted as collateral with central banks. In Australia, the stock of mortgages is expanding at a slower pace than occurred during the adjustment to financial liberalisation and the low inflation environment. A related development is that housing turnover remains well below its peak in the early 2000s, which has contributed to a decline in prepayment rates. The corollary of this is that a lower level of RMBS issuance is required to fund a given share of Australian mortgages. In fact, the share of mortgages funded by securitisation has been more or less stable during the past year at around 8%. Alongside these slow-moving forces that are exerting themselves on the RMBS market, the global regulatory reform agenda is also playing its part. As the Reserve Bank has noted on more than one occasion, the ongoing effort to improve the regulation of the financial system amid a reassessment of funding and liquidity risk by banks and investors has the potential to affect the demand and supply of secured assets in a number of ways, and the net result of these interactions is actually quite difficult to pin down. But to take one example, the Basel III liquidity standard might, all else equal, be expected to raise the demand for repo-eligible securities, including highly rated RMBS. However, it's difficult to disentangle the effects of this reform from the reassessment of liquidity needs by banks and investors. The approach taken by APRA and the RBA in the implementation of this reform has been designed to have minimal disruption to the balance of supply and demand in securities markets. This extends to the classification of eligible securities for the bank's committed liquidity facility, as well as the various prices and haircuts that will be applied to eligible securities. I couldn't let this opportunity pass without saying something about the bank's securitisations reporting initiative, which was announced at last year's conference. As has been stated previously, the bank's primary motivation for collecting more information on asset-backed securities, such as RMBS, is to better assess the risk of these assets as they have the potential to appear on the bank's balance sheet. In fact, around $20 billion of these securities will appear on the bank's balance sheet later this month, as banks hold much higher cash balances with the RBA to cover settlement exchanges that occur after the close of the cash market each day. And in fact, today was the start of the lodgement period for those securities. So in tomorrow's dealing intentions, you'll be able to see how much self-securitised has actually been lodged with the RBA. From the 1st of January 2015, roughly $300 billion of these securities could potentially appear on the bank's balance sheet with the introduction of the committed liquidity facility. Given this very large potential exposure, the bank has a responsibility to ensure that that risk is actually well managed. The data that the bank receives will allow it to refine its pricing where there are large geographic or borrower type concentration in loan pools, for example, and will use that discretion. And details of the cash flows associated with each security will provide greater transparency to the liability side of each transaction. This information will be particularly important for pricing self-securitisations, for which there are no market prices. The bank, that's actually our primary motivation, but we've also been motivated by our interest in promoting transparency in asset-backed markets as well. And this really recognises the inefficiencies associated with investors, other market participants and regulators not having access to relevant, reliable and standardised information in order to better understand and monitor risk. Regulatory reform will also result in increased demand for quality collateral. To this end, the bank has made it a requirement that certain information be made publicly available if securities are to be eligible for the bank's open market operations. In designing the templates, the bank has been mindful of the need to balance concerns about privacy with investors' need to have enough information available to make a well-informed investment decision. To address these concerns about privacy, information providers will not report names and addresses and will replace actual loan and borrower ID numbers with dummy identifiers. In its latest round of consultation, which closed at the end of October, the bank has also proposed that loan-level data not be provided publicly at the postcode level. Property location will be identified in the loan template by an ABS statistically defined area, while a separate pool-level postcode summary of key variables in the loan template would be made publicly available. Certain dates will also be reported in calendar quarters rather than exact dates. The intention here is to limit the ability to derive property transaction data which will hinder borrower identification. In addition, users of the data will be limited to those with a legitimate purpose, such as potential investors and researchers. And these users will need to register with the information provider to access the data and enter into a binding agreement that limits the purpose for which the data may be used to an appropriate purpose. Under this agreement, users should not be able to match or attempt to match the data against other information in order to identify an individual. The final consultation period to determine the reporting templates is now closed. Once the bank has considered the submissions and reported back to industry, which we hope to occur by the end of this month, we will move into the implementation phase. This is a large project for both issuers and the bank. There are currently around 420 RBA-eligible asset-backed securities, and each issuer will have to bring together information from varied data sources. We recognise as well that the deadline is actually very tight. Cognizant of this, the bank has gone to tender for the external system which will support the new reporting requirements. And once this is finalised, we will make available its technical requirements and give some sense of the relative importance of the various pieces of information as early as is practicable in that way you can focus your resources on the things that matter most to us. Communications relating to this will be via the bank's website. So on the rba.gov.au website, if you type in securitisations in the search field, it will take you to the homepage for the project. This will be the official source of information and testing and implementation coordination for the new reporting requirements. For example, a worked hypothetical example of the cash flow waterfall, which will provide the industry with a concrete implementation of this reporting template, will be posted on this site shortly. And I would strongly encourage people to visit the site and register for the RSS feed to receive alerts. The bank is also seeking progress reports from information providers every 2 months. Once again, I would strongly encourage information providers to complete these reports. These will give the bank a good understanding of industry readiness and help us assist industry in its preparations. In conclusion, the securitisation market continues to recover. And 2 years on, it's clear that covered bonds are a useful funding tool for Australian banks, enabling them to diversify their investor base and extend the tenor of their issuance. These instruments will continue to provide banks with access to a wholesale funding source that is less sensitive to global risk events than unsecured funding. As for increased transparency in the securitisation market, I don't get the sense that the bank is actually pushing against the tide. It's already happening in other jurisdictions, and in my discussions with issuers and investors, it's clear that they both see potential benefits. As a result, I take some comfort in the fact that this is a collective endeavour. Thank you for your time.